The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
A traffic jam, but we got Chuck and Chernoff on the fan.
Nah, 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 nah.
I said Chuck and Chernoff.
I can't get a name.
Chuck and Chernoff on the fan.
Whammy! Whammy is right. Chuck and Chernoff on a Monday. Thanks so much for making us a part of your day. We're going to walk you right up to the Braves and the Brewers, hopefully getting the hell out of town. It helped the Braves after that mess of a weekend against the Padres. Tonight, it's the 7:40 first pitch on the Fan and the Fan mobile app with Ian Anderson and Freddie Peralta, your mound matchup. The 3 o'clock hour of our show is brought to you by This Stuff Matters. Listen to the new This Stuff Matters podcast posted at 680 The Fan's website under the podcast header or at thisstuffmatters.net. Let's start the 3 o'clock hour by saying hello to Charles Oliver.
Hey, Matt.
Hi, Chuck.
Guess what's in my hot tub?
Tell me.
There's nothing in the hot tub. There's water. That's it.
Well, then why would I try to guess? Is there anything else? That's it.
I just water.
We're done. Didn't feel like quite went too far on this one today.
There was another one I backed out.
Did you edit yourself?
I did.
Because of fear?
Yeah.
Fear of who specifically?
The man.
Oh, God. All right. You see what you did to him now? You're all up in his head.
Me or Digital Chuck?
Both.
No.
The Braves lost 2-3 over the weekend to the Padres. There's so many angles of this I want to talk about. Yesterday was a 7-3 loss to San Diego, so they dropped the series, and it was ugly, top to bottom. I don't know if a thing called a World Series hangover has ever existed, because usually it's in the NFL and Super Bowl hangovers. This Braves team looks like from time to time they have it, and this weekend was either a lack of focus at times or a lack of preparation on the most elementary of stuff. I was watching that this weekend like I watch my 9-year-old's Little League. Like the easiest things they couldn't get right defensively, not to mention at times offensively, it was a bleeping mess. There was some bad news Bears thoughts in my mind. 2 or 3 times watching Matt Olson have a ball go right off his glove that was thrown down to first by William Contreras. 2 or 3 times watching Austin Riley try to field a ball or throw a ball.
Could have just got down to third.
There was just the whole thing. A throw by Ozzie Albies that was nowhere close to being in a position for William Contreras to get a tag down. Yesterday, watching Lando Garcia try to bunt. Do you ever wonder why we don't bunt? There was an example yesterday. Can I highlight a couple of positives before we go back to the negative?
Yeah.
I thought Kyle Wright pitched his tail off
again
yesterday.
Against a really good lineup.
He went 6 1/3, 3 hits, 2 earned, 2 walks, 9 Ks. The Braves gifted the Padres 2 runs. The first one, as I mentioned, on a throw behind the runner at first where Contreras is trying to pick up a guy off. Matt Olson, I don't know if he took his eye off it or it just ticked off his glove. It goes into right field, and a runner from second base who was diving back into second gets up and scores. Then later on, the Braves had another instance where it could have been a double play ball. That was a ball hit to Austin Riley. Couldn't scoop it. Next thing you know, the Padres are hitting a sac fly to tie the game. Braves had one of those instances on Saturday night, too, or in the Saturday afternoon game where the defense let them down. Think about what this weekend could have been, Chuck. They had 2 leads in the 7th. They had another lead in the 8th. The only game they won took kind of a miracle comeback on Saturday.
I'm surprised it didn't get worse after Riley's throw on Saturday.
You needed an Ozuna 2-run homer, then the Riley double, or else you could have been in control of all 3 games with one of the best bullpens in the game, and your defense let you down in such a way that you almost got swept. I don't know how Snit would stay as calm as he did. Maybe winning a championship helps that a little bit a few months earlier. I don't know. But I'd be tossing stuff around the clubhouse. I would be losing it a little bit because that is Little League stuff that they were doing
wrong. It was
wrong.
Not good baseball.
It was sloppy.
And the pen has some unevenness.
I still don't think it's the pen. That was more defense to me than anything else over the weekend.
Sure. But again,
like Will Smith wasn't great, but.
Like I said, some unevenness is all I said.
But look at the defense behind Will the other day.
Not good.
Like, how many outs do you think the Braves gave away in two ball games?
And if they would have lost Saturday, you'd have burned Kenley. And the bullpen got in a weird spot anyway yesterday. But
boy, Kenley's been so good.
Because he was in the eighth. But if you would not have won on Saturday, wow.
Again, Will was not good in these two games, Friday and Saturday. But some of it, again... Well, you know we have Will in the game. You know you're going to get pitched to contact, and you got to make those plays. Simple enough.
Now, on the plus side, Mariners did work this weekend, so thanks to Seattle.
It doesn't hurt.
It's May 16th. I can't get enough of the Mets losing. Give me some stinking Mets bad news.
Here's the other
thing. Especially with how well they're playing.
Here's the other part of it. It was another huge strikeout weekend for the Braves. They struck out 38 times in three games. 9 Friday, 13 Saturday, 16 yesterday, and it seems like they're consistently in 0-2 or 1-2 counts. I don't know if it's a strike recognition problem, a lack of discipline problem, but if you ever want to really entertain yourself during a Braves game, grab a pen and a pad and start counting how many guys are in 1-2 and 0-2 counts, but yet hit like they're up 2-0 in the count.
See, that's the problem, and this wasn't anything to kind of stretch out into an actual topic, but an observation. It was all weekend watching other games.
See, you watch other games. I don't watch other baseball.
It's free.
I understand.
I was there.
Baseball is so boring right now, I can't get myself to watch.
There are teams all over the bigs who got very little right this offseason. All over the National League, who didn't get a whole lot right this. They got the DH right. It's kind of attainable to get a guy to just step up there and whack a baseball or try to 4 or 5 times a night. The Braves didn't get that right so far.
They tried to bunt because everybody loves the bunt, right? 10th inning yesterday, you get out of the top, so you get the bottom. Here comes Arcia to lay a bunt down to move the runner. Bunts it right back to the pitcher, and you get the out of third base, and all of a sudden that rally's killed. And then the 11th inning was just an S show again yesterday. Just, it was a mess. There's no other way to say it. Braves are back at it with Milwaukee. The first of three tonight, Ian Anderson, Freddie Peralta. I have not seen a lineup. Gentlemen, if you do see one, let me know. We're all waiting to see if Acuna is back.
Ian, right now, just this season, just the past 5 weeks, what's your opinion?
Of who?
Ian.
Oh, Ian's been fine.
Okay.
Yeah, Ian's been fine.
Okay.
Especially after the first couple of starts, Ian's been good. I have no problem with
Ian. All right.
Like, my issues remain the two things. And I knew this was going to be a high swing and miss team, but the only way that works is if you're hitting the home runs that equal that out, not just the solo homers. So that's still my biggest issue. I don't know where the defensive thing came from. This is always one of the elite defensive teams in baseball. And maybe this weekend is in my head right now or more than that. They just give away outs.
Mm-hmm. And DeMarit actually made a good play this weekend.
Travis is fine. I have no problem with Travis in the outfield.
Yeah, he made the good play.
He did. It's rough to watch. All right, the Falcons had their rookie mini camp in Flowery Branch. So your first chance to kind of lay eyes on the draft class and then the media, talk to these guys after practice. I wasn't there. So what I have to do is rely on people that I trust, like D-Led, the esteemed beat reporter for the Falcons.
It's D-Led's 5 observations from the Falcons minicamp.
D-Led got an open. These are D-Led's 5 things we learned from Falcons minicamp.
Hey, good morning, Coach. How are you today?
Number 1, Desmond Ridder is loud. That's it. Number 1. That was number 1.
Oh, yeah, Coach,
apparently, he wakes up early around 6 a.m. to try to beat everybody to the building. And his fellow rookie, John Fitzpatrick, said, he's so loud in the morning. He's jumping around. He's like, I got to tell him, quiet down.
They roomies?
I don't know. Maybe that's in the
locker
meeting
room.
I don't know. Number 2.
Hey,
stop. Tryout rookies.
Stop.
Former Georgia Tech lineman Ryan Johnson was among the tryout players. Be my I wasn't there, so I've got to rely on eyes that were there. Thank you, D-Led. Number 3.
You know, tell us a little bit about the copyright
and stop
making the songs for your daughter's wedding.
That was to Dean Pease when he met him. Okay, context is king. Number 3, lacrosse guy. Former Ferris State quarterback Jarrett Bernard, one of the Falcons' undrafted rookie free agents, is getting a look at wide receiver. He played lacrosse at Maryland before transferring to Ferris State and leading the team to the Division II football title. Arthur Smith watched his lacrosse tape and liked the way he attacked the crease. Awesome. My football team will have more guys that can attack the crease than yours. Number 4.
Please explain the benefits
You know,
I'm trying to. D-Led's, he was the number four. John Fitzpatrick's short drive. These are rookie camp observations. Falcons rookie tight end John Fitzpatrick, who played at Georgia and went to Marist, had about a 40-minute drive to rookie minicamp. Doesn't seem like I missed all that much this weekend. Did he give directions on his way from Marist to Flowery Branch to let people know exactly what he was doing? I don't know that. And number five, D-Leds.
I withdraw. Mine was on the draft class, and Terry just covered it, so thank you.
Would you stop being you? Number five, Tyler Allgeier's workload. Former BYU running back Tyler Allgeier was a workhorse for the Cougars. He had 276 carries last season and was asked how he stayed ready to carry such a heavy workload. And he said something effective: you stay ready. You don't have to get ready. There you go, D-Leds. Five rookie minicamp observations. I wasn't there. I'm glad D-Led knows that he's man's good. He's good at what he does. Chuck, your thoughts.
I wasn't there either.
I wasn't there. That's why
I'm glad we got the.
We found out about a lacrosse guy.
Connected the dots there.
Desmond Ritter's loud.
A couple of John Fitzpatrick notes.
He drove a short distance.
And. Doesn't like being around.
You guys are a-holes, man. I'm just trying to read some observations, and you guys are just a bunch of.
Desmond Ritter in the morning.
Desmond's loud. Desmond's loud in the morning. Got there at 6 a.m. Oh, he wasn't the first guy in the building, though, Chuck. I left that out. Turns out that Tyler Vrabel, does that name sound familiar to you?
Yes.
Mike Vrabel's son.
Sure.
As a rookie, undrafted free agent, trying to make the team. He beat Desmond Ritter to the building. D-Led's five rookie minicamp observations.
Now, I understand. Be a go-getter. Let me just. It doesn't matter if you're the first guy there.
No, they like the guy who's first in, last out. That's always been a thing I've heard.
No, they like the guy that can catch.
You know what I used to hear about Mike Vick? Mike was always last in, first out.
And he started. Well, so did it have anything to do with him being there?
But did he get better to the point he needed to get?
If you play, they'll put you on the field. It doesn't matter at all. Whoever that rookie was, it doesn't matter that you're there first. It does not matter. You have to be able to play.
Folks, you understand who gets to the building here earlier rather than later. I think you just explained that one.
At 8:30.
What do you do all day? Let's get a wing in an idea.
It's time to wing it. Brought to you by Wingin' Burger Factory. With over 50 Atlanta locations, find yours at WNBFactory.com.
So you'll send your Wingin' It idea answers to the Harris Cherokee Casino's Twitter feed. Did you see who is going to don the cover of the SI swimsuit issue?
Is it a retro cover?
Nope.
I don't know. Who is it then?
Kim Kardashian.
She's not my taste.
Whether she is or isn't, there was a day and time when if I asked you that question, did you see who's going to be on the cover of the SI swimsuit? You go, Kathy Ireland or...
Oh, yeah.
Elle McPherson. You would have known. So here's the question today, and you have to fill in this blank. Blank doesn't really matter anymore, and the SI swimsuit issue is one of those things that you can find, you know, bikinis and boobies and everything in every nook and cranny and crevice of the internet, so that doesn't matter anymore. So just give us something that does not matter anymore. Fill in that blank for us. Like if I said... kind of along those lines. Remember when the Miss America pageant used to be a big deal? It hasn't been a big deal in a very long time.
Having a six-pack of Coors doesn't really matter. It used to be a big deal.
Boxing used to be a big deal.
Monday Night Football
used to be a big deal.
But that's supposed to be coming back.
I hope. I just don't know if it could ever be what it was culturally. Brian Hoyt, blank. Doesn't really matter anymore.
Playboy, Penthouse, any of those things.
Porn.
Yeah. Well, no, the points don't matter.
Well, BJ.
Music release dates.
Oh, that used to be such a big deal to get a CD or a tape when the day was... Oh, stand in line there at Tower Records, big deal. Dan Matthews.
Personal athleticism.
Personal athleticism?
Yeah. Why does it matter? We're not earning money doing this.
Okay.
Easy for you to say.
Wait, BJ is all over you today. That. Fill in this blank.
I did, but I'll wear it.
Blank doesn't really matter anymore. You'll send your answers to the Harris Cherokee Casino's Twitter feed. Tom Glavin, the Hall of Famer, joins us in 15 minutes. I'm going to ask him, is there anything to a World Series hangover? Is that real? His team won a World Series in 95. I wonder if he can try to put some context into what's going on with this Braves team right now. We'll ask him in 15 minutes. Coming up next, though, the times they are a-changing for the Falcons.
The times they are a-changing.
And for the Aints.
Not good.
Oh,
not
I disagree.
Good.
You're so wrong. This is poetry. This is so good. The times there are changing for the Falcons and the Aints, but in this case, change is good. We'll tell you about it next.
To a pitch tapper out to Riley, can't make the play, gets through him.
No, Tanner, no, everybody watch this. You get down, and you bleed there. First of all, it hits your body, you can still make the play.
That was Brian Snitker talking to his club. They're having a rough defensive weekend. I know it's
Come on, Dorn, get in front of the damn ball.
Sure, it sounded like Buttermaker and Lou Brown, but that's Snit.
Don't give me this ole bullshit.
I had Riley play yesterday.
It was rough.
That was... He just kind of put his glove out.
You got all these theories on the internet that he's dad tired. The newborn at home. Everybody's like, got to get on the road. What do we always say? When we go on the road, the hotel's set at 61 degrees, you sleep. Riles needs that. Maybe that's the right answer. We'll find out.
Doesn't he have a night?
A night nurse?
Nurse?
I don't know. No matter what.
I was going to say night nanny.
I don't care how much help you have. A newborn's a newborn, and it's exhausting. Maybe not to the same level of if he's doing it by himself. I don't know what his situation is. I'm not sure. I don't know what Mrs. Riley has as far as help. We can find out. The 3 p.m. hour is brought to you by This Stuff Matters. Listen to the new This Stuff Matters podcast posted at 680 The Fan's website under the podcast header or at thisstuffmatters.net. The Hall of Famer, Tom Glavine, will join us in about 5 minutes. I'm going to ask him if this dumb World Series hangover thing, is that real? Because I've only heard it in the NFL for Super Bowl hangovers. Because watching this team sometimes right now through 35 games, it's looks like a team that might be content at times.
I thought the hangover was from the Falcons because they lost and they hadn't gotten over the Super Bowl disappointment.
I feel like
it'd also be the euphoria of smell us.
Now they went 10-6 and went to the playoffs though, which kind of debunked the whole like Super Bowl hangover. They went to the second round of the playoffs.
They did.
Doesn't matter.
They won on the road.
We'll talk to Glav about that. But first, last week when the schedule came out, we saw the Falcons and Saints will meet in the opener. And like on the micro level, the Saints are still better than the Falcons and probably will be for the extent of the next year. And maybe that means they'll win the opener at MBS. Maybe they'll win both games in the 2022 season. I don't know. But Chuck, I think the times they are a-changing for the Falcons and Saints. I was doing a little bit of looking ahead to both teams' rosters. And if we agreed, the crux of trying to get an idea what a team is going to be is based on a few factors. Current roster, salary cap situation moving forward, age of roster, draft capital, those type of things. Boy, the Saints and Falcons are going in completely different directions. As of right now, the Falcons are going to be north of about $70 million to spend next season. That number can go higher depending on a couple of contracts. The Saints have seemingly pulled off the impossible. They're projected to be $54 million over the cap next season, and that's without a $35 or $40 million quarterback. They have Jameis at quarterback, who I think is counting $11 million. So if you look ahead to what the Saints have to do, they could be very similar to where the Falcons are right now, just a bunch of dead money on their cap. They have choices to make. A year from now, here are the ages and the dead money that they could be faced with making the decisions with their roster. 30-year-old Michael Thomas. Keep him or have $25 million of dead money?
No.
$25 million of dead money for Michael Thomas.
Deal with it.
33-year-old Cam Jordan would count $23 million in dead money. If they cut 34-year-old DeMario Davis, $12 million of dead money. If they cut 30-year-old David Onyemata, $10 million of dead money. If they were to cut the second year of Tyrann Mathieu's deal, $14 million of dead money. 30-year-old Marcus May would count $12 million in dead money if they moved on. And the funniest of all, 32-year-old Taysom Hill, if they were to move on, would be $23 million in dead money. So they could try to run it back with this 30-plus-year-old group. And as of this morning, by my count, they'll have 15 guys a year from now that are 30 years old or older, which is an awful recipe around the league. The Falcons, who are in rebuild mold, they could have six guys who are 30 years or older, but that's if they brought back like Eric Harris, Damian Williams, Casey Hayward, Keith Smith. It could be a bunch of 24 to 27-year-olds.
No, but none of those. Hayward's all right, but like Keith Smith is not an important player.
They can move on from all those guys. Then there's the draft pick story. The Falcons have their first, second, third, and fourth rounder, plus their sixth and seventh. They just traded their fifth for an extra seventh, and they got Bryan Edwards from the Raiders. Meanwhile, the Saints don't have a first-round pick next year. They were so gung-ho to make that deal with the Eagles this year that they are going to be without a first, so they have a second through fifth and a seventh. So they have a ton of salary cap issues, no first-round pick, no franchise quarterback, a roster of 30-plus-year-old dudes, and I'm assuming Dennis Allen will do a fine job, but I don't know. I couldn't tell you who would have the coaching advantage between Arthur Smith and Dennis Allen moving forward, but I tell you this. I like the Falcons situation. If you asked yourself, whose situation do you want over the next 2 or 3 years, you want the blank canvas that is the Atlanta Falcons. Now, you have to get the stuff right, but without the blank canvas, you can't fix stuff. That's where the Saints are.
Taysom is the...
Don't get that deal.
Especially peculiar one, because he's the really, really expensive player that it's not like, well... you say like Davis. All right, well, hell, he'd play linebacker another year.
34 of them.
Michael Thomas. All right, well, he'll play wide receiver. Taysom Hill, he's pricey. They don't know what they're going to do with him.
Didn't they say he's going to sort of profile as a tight end pass catcher?
Sort of profile, yes.
For $23 million of dead
money. Sort of profile. Sort of profile.
I don't know. The whole look of the NFC South in the next 2 years, Carolina and Atlanta are right now, they're both a mess. I'll call them a mess.
I think it's advantageous for the Falcons that Brady came back, I think.
Well, it might in one respect.
Big picture.
In one respect. He's going to, let's say it's one more year of Tampa with Brady. They're going to have to hit the reset button after Brady leaves. New Orleans is going to have to hit it at some point. If you're the Falcons or the Panthers, whoever can get it right most and fastest might have an insight on kind of running the division for the next several years, but you got to get the stuff right. Drafted Matt Corral in the third. The Falcons drafted Desmond Ridder. Neither one feels like an answer long term. But if one gets lucky, there's your answer.
What if out of all four teams right now, Tampa's not only, they got Brady, so they got the best quarterback. Out of all four teams, Tampa also actually is the only one with its next quarterback already on the roster in Kyle Trask.
I don't buy that. That would be like saying Desmond Ridder's my next Kyle Trask. I don't think there is one in the division.
With Arians and Brady and his talent and everything else. I mean, I think I'd rather have him than Ridder, I think.
If that's your bar, you might be right. I have no idea. I don't want any of them.
I want Sam Darnold.
If any of them end up being the right answer, it's sort of lucky.
I think I just missyllabled.
You did. It's Sam Darnold. But that's fine. Where was Trask drafted?
Last pick of the first round. Or second round.
Yeah. So it's essentially Desmond Ridder territory and Matt Corral.
Within 10 picks of it.
Yeah, one of them could hit, but I wouldn't count on any of them. I just know that the Falcons have the blank canvas. That intrigues me. Whether they get it right, time will tell.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
When you buy a used car, don't be taken for a ride. Get Ford Blue Advantage certified at Wade Ford, Atlanta's headquarters for factory certified pre-owned vehicles. Go to wadeford.com. There you'll find a great selection of Ford Blue Advantage certified used cars, trucks, and SUVs. With Blue certified, nearly all makes and all models are in stock now. You'll find something perfect for just about any budget. Buy with confidence at the Wade Ford factory certified used car outlet at wadeford.com. Wade Ford. We are Atlanta's Ford dealer.
He's a Hall of Famer, an Atlanta legend, and again this season, he's only on one station.
There it is. Career strikeout number 1,000.
Struck him out. 7 strikeouts through 5. Hasn't allowed the Indians a hit.
And that's 300 wins for Tom Glavine.
It's the Tom Glavin Show, presented by Brown & Company Jewelers on Holcomb Bridge Road in Roswell and Peachtree Road in Buckhead, and by attorney Ken Nugent. One call, that's all.
All right, I'm not going to do this thing where I go to introduce Tom and Chuck tramples all over me with his excitement to talk to Glav, so we're going to do this professionally this week. The Hall of Famer.
Dan, how are you today?
Tom, I'm sorry. I tried, and he didn't get your name right. I apologize. Glav, how are you?
I'm great. He's just an excitable guy. I mean, you don't want to take that away from him.
I thought it was Dan Marino.
Every week when you come on, he just gets so excited.
He said Hall of Famer. I don't know.
I understand. Tom, I've heard the dumb term Super Bowl hangover before, and I never wanted to acknowledge it. I don't know if that applies to Major League Baseball. You won a championship and then had to come try to defend it. I don't know. Maybe I'm reaching too far. I'm watching this Brave team certain nights, and I'm like, this is sort of like elementary stuff that I'm watching them mess up, and I don't know if that's a lack of focus or being content or none of the above. What do you think?
I don't know that content is the right word. I mean, I think that you know, it's still early in the year. I mean, look, it's the Braves weren't exactly lighting the world on fire this time last year either. So, you know, I think there was a lot. It was a lot harder to have faith that they would turn things around at this point last year than there is this year, because at least we can say, well, they did it last year, so maybe they can do it again this year. So at least you have that. There's something to be said for World Series hangover, whatever you want to call it. And I don't think it's complacency. I think it has everything to do with what we've talked about before with individual guys. It's a very short off season. You know, when you win the World Series, you go deep into the year, and the next thing you know, it's like, oh my God, it's time to go to spring training again. And, you know, there's an emotional come down, there is a physical come down, and then you have to gear it all back up again. And that period of time to gear it back up is shorter. You know, there's always a period after every season when they have to unwind, you have to let your mind, your body heal and all that stuff. And everything is condensed. So, you know, guys went through that for the first time. I don't know how it impacted their off-season training or things of that nature. But, you know, there is something to that. You know, but I also think, too, and I'm not giving into this, so to speak, but, you know, when you win a championship, pretty much everything goes your way. And the odds of doing that again 2 years in a row are hard. So I think sometimes the things that go your way in a championship year don't go your way in a non-championship year. And sometimes they're big, sometimes they're small. But I just think more than anything else, you know, they're finding their way a little bit. And, you know, I still think they're going to be fine. Now, much like we talked about last year when they didn't play well early on, it at least they had the silver lining that nobody in their division was doing anything either. The fact that the Mets are playing good baseball is a little bit more concerning, because you don't want to dig too deep of a hole. But there's no doubt in my mind they're going to play better baseball and get on some kind of roll.
After this weekend, part of me is thinking, you know what, a big leaguer, he knows it was bad baseball this weekend. Big league ball player doesn't need a manager to say anything. But then I'm thinking, part of it, I've heard so many times that, you know what, sometimes table needs to be turned over. Is there any value to like a 30-year-old veteran and the manager comes in and kicks over the chicken fingers and roast beef? I mean, is there any, like, what is that?
There is. And I think it's more than anything else. It's just to send the message that, hey, this isn't okay. Right. Like we're not going to be okay with this long term. Right. I mean, errors are part of baseball. You know, you always hear that saying that, you don't mind the physical errors. The mental errors are a problem, but, you know, physical errors are going to happen. You never like them, but they're going to happen. And so you know, as a manager, coaches, you know, teammates, whatever, you bite the tongue a little bit and you allow some things to go. But, you know, after a while, when things aren't cleaning themselves up, yeah, it's, you know, a well-placed, you know, table turnover or somebody screaming and yelling is not a bad thing, because like I said, if nothing else, it just brings attention to the fact that, hey, just because nobody said anything and nobody's yelling at anybody up to this point, this is not acceptable. And at some point in time, you just got to remind guys that, hey, this ain't acceptable and we got to be better.
Tom Glavin, the Hall of Famer with Chuck and Chernoff on the Fan. Now, I turn to the internet for all my theories, and Braves Twitter has a theory that Austin Riley needs to get out of town. He needs to get to the hotel where he has no newborn and no real life. So while I'm tongue-in-cheeking with you a little bit, what is that like for a major league player? Because there is real life, just like the rest of us have at home with kids and family and paying bills and, you know, moms in the hospital or whatever it might be. How did you handle the real life stuff, and is there an advantage sometimes to being on the road away from it?
No, there is. Look, I mean, there's truth in guys looking forward to going on the road when they have little ones at home, because they can actually get some rest. There is 100% truth in that. It was a little bit easier for me as a pitcher, because number one, watch this shameless plug, I had a great wife. you know, number two, I was pitching, so I could do whatever I wanted with the kids 4 days a week. And then when it was my day to pitch, you know, I could sleep in and kind of pass everything off to my wife and let her do it that one day. But, you know, everyday players can't do that, you know? And so It's a little bit harder. It takes some getting used to. There's no question about it. But, I think it's the kind of thing, like anything, when you're going through it for the first time, you're trying to learn the balance. And I think guys learn the balance pretty quickly.
I'd always heard, and then when he was a coach, the same thing, that Terry Pendleton, as far as the self-regulation, like when he was a player, the manager didn't have to say a thing, you know, a lot of times. Was that legit? Was that really TP?
It was. Look, I think you, when you're looking at guys and trying to assess team leadership qualities, right, you have guys that are kind of the vocal guys, guys that are kind of the quiet guys and lead by example. There are some guys that are probably a little bit of both. TP was that vocal guy for us. He was the guy that, and not vocal in the sense that he's coming in the locker room every day, rah-rah, but vocal in the sense that if something needed to be addressed with somebody, an individual, he did it. And, not everybody's willing to do that. I think some of us, I wasn't the type of guy that wanted to sit there and tell somebody, hey, you're doing this wrong. You need to do this. You need to do that. But, if we had a team meeting, I'd be more than willing to put in my 2 cents. So, guys are wired differently, but TP was definitely that guy that, Bobby trusted to take care of a lot of that stuff, to be his policeman, so to speak, in the locker room. And TP was a willing participant in that. And I think that's an important thing to have, to take a lot of that stuff away from your manager, because let's face it, no team wants their manager having to come down on them all the time. And most times it means more coming from a colleague or a peer, so to speak.
Tom Glavine in the Hall of Famer with Chuck and Chernoff on the Fan. Glav, I fully understand where the game is with strikeouts. I get it. We knew the Braves were going to have a high strikeout, team. It's a lot of power. It's a lot of strikeouts. So I'll give the preamble. Oh, they struck out 38 times in 3 games in this Padres series. And it strikes me as odd that hitters are attacking 1-2 and 0-2 counts still the same way they would 2-0 and 2-1. I don't know. How does that change? Like, it feels like the mindset, and this starts at a young age for hitters in little league and then high school ball and then college ball. Like, I don't know how we change the current issue with baseball and this strikeout epidemic.
I don't know how you do either. I feel like we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. The same thing went on last year. I remember doing games early in the year where the strikeout rate was alarming. Like, they're 14, 15 routinely, in a given series, and you're worried about it. Look, when you're not making contact, that's in essence, three or four innings worth of outs that you're not making contact. And, that's a tough way to win. Now the Braves turned it around last year and became a much better team in terms of not striking out, but did they do it because they changed their approach? Did they do it because they just got better? It's probably all of the above. I struggle with it. And again, I know we've talked about it. I struggle with the notion that a hitter's approach is the same on a 2-0 or a 3-1 count as it is 0-2. I struggle with that. I see value in a guy shorten his swing a little bit with 2 strikes, or God forbid, even choking up, and putting the ball in play, putting pressure on the defense. I mean, let's face it, you saw the mistakes the Braves made defensively this weekend that led to them losing ball games. Well, that doesn't happen if you don't put the ball in play, So I think there's the value of putting the ball in play, I feel like, has been lost. And it's been overtaken by the notion that, hey, you could, hit a home run in an 0-2 count or a 3-1 count. So, don't change your approach. I just don't like that, both from a team standpoint and, like I've said many times too, from a pitching standpoint. I love facing a guy whose approach is the same 0-2 as it was 3-1. You're not going to shorten up. You're not going to make me throw a strike and you put the ball in play. Great. That's great for me as a pitcher. So I feel like, again, they went through this a little bit last year, and then they kind of started changing their approach a little bit in terms of trying to stay more up the middle and in the bigger parts of the ballpark. Got away from being a little bit pull happy and things like that, and things seemed to turn around. But I just feel like that's a philosophy across the board offensively in baseball now that I personally hate. I hate it.
Yeah, you and me both. Tom, always appreciate the time. I'm sorry Chuck called you Dan. He won't do it again next week.
Rude. Well, I'll tell you what, school him a little bit before next Monday so he remembers who's coming on.
Thank you, Glav.
All right, see you.
There's the Hall of Famer, Tom Glavin. You throw him off when you do that. No, he's not prepared for it. It's never happened to him in his big career. What is that noise in the middle? Some sort of AT&T message coming across? Live radio is awesome. All right, coming up next, it's a new look with a completely different price tag for you, Atlanta.
It's a long tease.
I know. We'll find out what it means next. Chuck and Chernoff on the Fan, thanks for making us a part of your Monday. We're going to take you right up to the Braves and the Brewers, 7:40.
Go Brewers!
Awful, Chuck, just awful. First pitch at 7:40, Ford leadoff show, 6:80 game day, all the fun leading up to Ian Anderson, Freddie Peralta. You can hear it on the 6:80 The Fan app as well, which you can get all your favorite shows, you can get all your big news, and baseball at night on the Fan app driven by Beaver Direct. It's the fastest and easiest way to shop online for your next vehicle. Visit beavertoyotaofcoming.com to see what WOW.
Now, I love coming.
Really means. Download the Fan app in the iTunes and Google Play Store. That would be your time to tell me you like coming. And to hit the intro to Front Office Lowe's.
He's the man that knows the cap, bonuses, and all of that. He's the one that gets you good. Front Office Lowe's don't give a word. He's the guy who knows the law. Can't put him against the wall. He's the guy with all the answers. Matt and Chuck are backup dancers. Front Office Lowe's knows it all.
This awkward moment is brought to you by Entry Point Doors and Windows. When it's time to change out the entryway to your home, you can do that with Entry Point Doors and Windows. Been doing it in Atlanta for over 20 years. Check them out, entrypointatlanta.com. Sign up for the free estimate. So one of the things that we've always known about the Atlanta Falcons over the past decade is the way they've built their roster was really emphasizing giving Matt Ryan as many weapons as possible. That started obviously with having Roddy White on the roster. That continued when they went out and got Tony Gonzalez. That also continued when they went and got Julio Jones in a major trade-up. This is a team that when you take a look at their roster spending over the years, and I'm going to start with the year 2014, the Falcons were sixth in the NFL on spending on wide receivers, a total amount of $17.9 million in cap space. It's about 14% of your cap. You can move forward and look what happened from there. 2015, third in the league, $24 million, 17.8% of their cap. 2016, obviously a huge year. Fourth in the NFL, 21.9% of their cap, about 14%. And you can go through the years, and the Falcons consistently stayed as a top five team in terms of spending on wide receivers. Things are changing, y'all, and things are changing by quite a bit. So we did have the trade over the weekend, and you now have Brian and Edwards, who is now an Atlanta Falcon. Understand that the Atlanta Falcons, when you take a look at what they're spending on wide receivers total, when I tell you the number's $14 million, you're going to say, okay, that sounds like what it was in the past, but this is a much bigger cap. Right now, the Falcons are spending 6.7% of their cap. That is 29th in the NFL. This is now starting to look like what other successful franchises have now kind of tracked to do. When you take a look at a team like Green Bay, who had the opportunity to spend on Devontae Adams, they right now are 28th in the league. They're spending $15 million on their wide receivers. Why? They're going to make sure they spend their money in other places. One of the better teams in the league, the Indianapolis Colts, are spending $12 million on wide receivers. They're 30th in the NFL. This is that trend moving forward. We're going to see how this plays out. The bottom of the league right now in terms of teams spending on their wide receivers goes Cowboys, Steelers, Packers, Falcons, Colts, Ravens, Bears. That's the trend we're going to have to follow to see if that continues, Matt Chernoff.
It was always a New England Patriot thing, right? With outside of Randy Moss, it was always kind of just, we're going to have our receivers. We won't spend a ton there. But for the Falcons, and this is something Chuck and I have talked about a lot, they're going to be inexpensive at that position for a few years, but that bill's going to come due. Like, if they hit the jackpot and Drake London is a true number one receiver and Kyle Pitts is a unicorn, whatever you want to call him, let's do the cap math on what they're going to end up paying those two down the road, which, again, it's down the road, but if they got it right in the draft.
It's pay Pitts, and again, if you're talking about the recent trend, it's you then trade London for picks. That's what we've now been seeing around the league, where even guys like A.J. Brown,
right,
who essentially had 3,000-yard seasons in 4 years, they moved him for picks. The 1 year you can look at the Atlanta Falcons, where there was a little bit of a change in terms of their cap numbers. In 2019, they were 23rd. $15.3 million. What happened? They redid the Julio Jones deal. That's the only reason. They've consistently been a top five, top six team. So that's what I'm going to be fascinated to watch over this, how they build this thing. Are they going to try and stay more in line with what some of the NFL teams are doing out there? That is front office lows.
Let me add one more element to this discussion, because as you
said, I had a question.
Oh, Chuck's got a question as well. But Los has brought this up too, Chuck, that if you have the cheaper quarterback, the guy on his first deal, yeah, we will pay for DeAndre Hopkins. And we will end up overspending on A.J. Brown if we have Jalen Hurts. Or we will end up spending...
Yeah, somebody's about to do that with DK.
Same kind of scenario. So, Los, not that the Falcons are going to, quote, have it right with Mariota or this rookie quarterback, but they can't afford then to overpay in those areas as long as the quarterback stays cheap.
Yeah, as long as the quarterback stays cheap, because he is going to be your single biggest factor in terms of cap hit on your team. And this year, obviously, that's kind of crazy because it's Matt Ryan's dead money. Next year, it changes. But really, the clock starts when you find the next quarterback. And after year three, he's going to want a new deal. That's when you know you've got to start kind of changing the structure of who you're paying and what exactly you're paying them.
Because, you know, sports fans, we have a 15-minute memory. People won't remember, probably, the Falcons were always among the most responsible NFL franchises when it came to cap money. In fact, remember the Levitre money they had? That was normal, $6 million in August, just hanging out there for a veteran. Is that a realistic thing anymore? And maybe across the league, maybe for the Falcons. And now, if you fast forward now another 6 years, I guess, to have $8.5 million just hanging around August 1 for the veteran who gets released?
It's difficult when you're one of those established teams, because you're typically spending right up to the salary cap. When you're a rebuilding team, the NFL has a rule called cap carryover, which is if I've got $20 million in space this year, I can carry all $20 million over to next year. The reason they have that is because over a three-year rolling average, you have to spend at least 90% of your cap. So teams that are kind of rebuilding typically have that extra in the kitty. The Falcons were just a little bit different. They made it a point all the time from about 2008 on to always have about $8 to $9 million here or there, if they just in case they needed it.
Los, awesome stuff, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, see you guys.
There he goes, front office Los, doing his front office Los things. Coming up next, a $118 million mistake is lurking on the Falcons roster, and Chuck really hopes it's not the Falcons $118 million that catches fire.
Set this bitch on fire.
Sound clean. We'll tell you about it next.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
When you buy a used car, don't be taken for a ride. Get Ford Blue Advantage certified at Wade Ford, Atlanta's headquarters for factory-certified pre-owned vehicles. Go to wadeford.com. There you'll find a great selection of Ford Blue Advantage certified used cars, trucks, and SUVs. With Blue certified, nearly all makes and all models are in stock now. You'll find something perfect for just about any budget. Buy with confidence at the Wade Ford factory-certified used car outlet at wadeford.com. Wade Ford. We are Atlanta's Ford dealer.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.